Hello, I'm Rich Burrows, and I'm a community manager at Gremlin.
And I'm Jacob Plick, a solutions architect at Gremlin, and welcome to Break Things on Purpose, a podcast about chaos engineering.
Our guests for this first episode are Anna Medina and Tammy Buto, who work with us at Gremlin. Welcome.
Thanks. Super excited to be on here.
Yep, indeed. Awesome. So to kind of kick things off, can you guys give us a bit of background about yourselves and what you do?
Yeah, I can go first. My name is Anna Medina. I'm currently working at Gremlin as a chaos engineer. So that kind of just means kind of like helping companies also do chaos engineering. This entails a little bit of like engineering work, a little bit of site reliability engineering work, and a little bit of advocacy front. Prior to this, I was a site reliability engineer and a software engineer at Uber. That's actually how I got started on chaos engineering, helping Uber build their own platform for it called UDestroy. And that's kind of like when I started seeing more on the topic of reliability and distributed systems. And I realized it was kind of like what I wanted to specialize on currently. And it's been lots of fun.
Awesome.
And my name's Tammy Buto. I'm a principal SRE here at Gremlin. And yeah, I've been here for over a year. I get to do a lot of chaos engineering every single day, which is very interesting on all types of different systems, Kubernetes, Docker, MySQL, Kafka, Redis, like you named it, I've probably tried it. And yeah, it's actually been really interesting to be able to just see how different systems handle when you inject failure. I really love learning about that and then trying to figure out how you can make your systems more resilient in the face of that failure. And prior to Gremlin, I was working at Dropbox, where I did a lot of chaos engineering on the storage team, which I was the SRE manager for. And that involved injecting failure into both MySQL and an in-house built storage system called Magic Pocket, which replaced S3 for Dropbox storage. So yeah, and we got a 10x reduction in incidents, which is why I really, really believe in chaos engineering, because I think it's very valuable. So great to be here on the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you. Let's just back up for a second. So explain it to me like I'm five. What is chaos engineering? Tammy, why don't you go?
So to me, chaos engineering involves running thoughtful, planned, and controlled experiments that teach us how our systems behave in the face of failure. Usually there are three steps that you'd like to follow. The first one is planning your experiment. So this is where you sit down with your team and you create a hypothesis and you think through like what could go wrong? What type of issue might we have? And then the next phase is thinking about how you can contain the blast radius. So this is where you try and plan out what is the smallest type of experiment or chaos engineering attack that you can run to be able to teach yourself something and to learn from it and to also get a positive impact. And then the next phase is where you scale or squash your chaos engineering experiment. So this is where you're thinking through, okay, like, did we identify anything we need to fix, anything that we can improve? And often a really good place to start is doing an experiment to improve your monitoring and alerting, because often, you know, I think always people will find issues with monitoring and alerting, like, for example, thresholds being set incorrectly, or, you know, worst case, you inject a failure and you can't even see it in your monitoring and alerting. Or another bad example that is pretty common is where maybe you're just not doing your calculations correctly and your monitoring is actually inaccurate. So yeah, that's how I would describe chaos engineering. What about you, Anna?
I really, really like the idea of kind of like making it like a validation of setting things up properly and kind of like onboarding to like new systems, new infrastructure, joining a new job and things like that, where you kind of like just get put into this playground and like you get to have so many toys to play with, but you don't really know how they work or how to use them. So with chaos engineering, that like also allows you to explore a little bit of that. So Tammy like mentioned kind of like checking like monitoring and stuff like that. It's like monitoring is really good on, you kind of like set it up, but you don't necessarily know if you set it up properly. And you just kind of like hope for the best. And it's just like putting all your eggs in one basket. And you're like, all right, we'll find out in the case like one of our dependencies fails, if we actually have set up our monitoring and like alerting properly. While with chaos engineering, it kind of like make sure that you're able to kind of like do a little bit of like a safety test, a precaution. You're able to be like, okay, cool. If we actually have like a failover that we actually need to do right now caused by some of our instances having some issues, like shutting down instances or Redis like primary clusters going down, like what actually happens. Mm-hmm. So you kind of like come up with these little scenarios that you kind of like get to play, but it just builds that assurance that everything that you build on from there is going to be reliable or resilient. And as you continue building more on top of it, you kind of like get to do more experiments as well. And then there's the part that I wish I would have done chaos engineering this way when I got into working in distributed systems. And it's very much of like, you have no idea how anything works because maybe you're at a company that has like over 50 microservices, and maybe instead of like a number of just being like in the hundreds of microservices, you're looking at an architecture that has like 500 to 2000 microservices. And you're just like, huh, where do I even begin understanding how our product works? Like, for example, like at Uber, it was very much of like, cool, we have all these microservices and they help us put our, like the user that wants to request a car and the partner that wants to come on board and say, I'm ready to drive. But you don't necessarily know how all these like microservices all connect to one another. And I think for the projects that I was working on at Uber, which included chaos engineering, and one of the other projects was trying to onboard Uber from a bare metal data center into the cloud using like GCP and AWS, we didn't necessarily have the perfect clear view of what microservices were needed to do a trip on the cloud. So being able to say like, okay, let's run some experiments to kind of like see where the trip flow is, and then also what actually happens if some of the hosts for these microservices start going down, how does that actually even affect the actual user, the driver, when they're trying to come online and stuff like that. So I think it's great for onboarding, like exploring your infrastructure, but at the same time, just always with the idea that you want to make sure that you're providing your customers, your users, the best experience possible, whether it's an internal tool or an external tool.
Yeah, so hope is probably not the best strategy when it comes to alerting.
Yeah, that's a fact. I think what's really interesting about the answer there is it kind of exposed something that I've been thinking a lot about, is around a new engineer. And, you know, onboarding, you're going through documents and, you know, that it could be, you know, old or new. And in some cases, a majority of the time, at least in my experience as a former SRE, was around I'm supporting and monitoring, you know, applications that I don't even know what it looks like under the hood, right? I don't know what its dependencies are. I'm really reliant on that monitoring and alerting to kind of hope for the best, right? And to reach this point. And then it's definitely one of those things where like, man, I wish I had that. Like that, I think, completes the circle, so to speak, around, you know, being able to prove out what I know and kind of going from there.
Yeah, one of the things that I think about is the difference between the system that you drew up on your whiteboard and the one that's actually running in production, right?
Sure.
Those are going to be two different things. And that's the point of like doing some of these experiments, is to figure out what's really happening.
Exactly.
Yeah. So one of the things, you know, in our industry is that we don't really have on-call training or any type of like simulation exercise, but, you know, we're running really critical systems that impact people's lives day to day. And, you know, if you look at other industries like the airline industry, they have flight simulation. I mean, you know, you don't just fly a plane one day. You actually go through training. People make sure that you're qualified to do that. So I think there's a lot that we can learn from other industries when we're thinking about building more reliable and resilient systems and just helping people be prepared. Because really it's that, you know, the fact is like your company should be supporting you and helping you feel good when you go on call and helping you feel like you're ready. And to me, chaos engineering can do that for you. You can use it as a way to do some on-call training. You could reproduce some past incidents. And yeah, you could just make sure that your team's actually sharing knowledge, because sometimes a team might have someone that has, you know, 5-10 years experience on the team, and it's really hard for them to share that knowledge with new team members. But sitting down in a room and doing a game day is a great way to share knowledge.
So I actually sat in a couple weeks ago on a customer game day, And they were doing that exact same thing. They were, they had had an outage and they were reproducing it using chaos engineering and seeing if their alerting was working now. And it was just so cool to observe that.
Yeah, like I actually, right before we started recording, I literally just got out of a game day with a customer. So I'm even more particularly excited than I normally am. So I'm glad you brought it up, Tammy, because one thing that I was really thinking about is kind of what makes a really good game day. And I think it's somewhere around, to Anna's point, you know, being able to prove out what you know, but also exposing, you know, the other things that you don't know and kind of creating action items around that. Am I on par, you think, or is there something I'm missing?
Oh, I think you're 100% on track. It's like chaos engineering, it lets you also see like the unknown unknown, mm-hmm. where you don't necessarily know how things behave, but you don't know what can actually happen. So there's like a little bit of like that bracket that you're able to kind of like think, hey, what would happen if my dependencies on some of the external providers for these APIs or images like actually fails, but you don't necessarily know what's going to happen until they actually go down. And that actually might cost your company to lose a lot of money. So why don't you think about some precaution steps before you even get there? So you kind of like get to start thinking about like, hey, we have all these things, but what actually happens if X happens to them? And you kind of like get to start putting random little things on those variables and you start getting to play around with the equation. But yeah, it's all fun in theory when you're just like putting it on like a whiteboard and it's like, oh yeah, what if this fails? And it's right. great that now like there's entire other discipline that we now get to like touch upon. And it's like, hey, let's actually like put all these things, these words and like thoughts that we have into actual practice and execute them. And I think game day is a perfect way to do it because you have some preparation that goes into this where you start thinking about what are those unknown unknowns, but at the mm-hmm. same time, you start making sure that you have the right tools in order to monitor it and like actually execute on it in case something bad happens. It's like your experiment is quote unquote failing in your terms where you start seeing customers get affected or traffic start getting dropped. Mm-hmm. And I think it just provides a lot of value into the engineering space that I think you don't necessarily get to see very much when you're building out these tools and systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's back up for a second and define what a game day is, because we've been throwing that term out there and some folks might not be familiar with it.
So I like to say that game days are kind of like hackathons for resiliency in a way, you know, where you're kind of getting everybody in a room and being able to say, hey, this is the application that we're trying to kind of battle test and prove out what we know. And like a good example of that is I had to touch on Anna's earlier point is we were kind of testing out and running some latency experiments. And I kind of went around the room and I said, what's the response rate for this between this application and this database? And, you know, there's about 3 or 4 different answers. And as it turned out, like none of them were actually accurate. So we all learned something.
I also like John Allspaugh talks a lot about the mental models that people have of a system, right? And so like usually someone in SRE or engineering is going to be familiar with parts of the system much more than others. And that's going to be how they view the system, right? Is through their own kind of prism. And I like that idea of getting together as a whole team and experimenting these things together and potentially being able to learn about parts of the system that you're not as familiar with.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, you know, gone is the old school kind of, you know, the dev doesn't know anything about production. They kind of toss the code over the bow and then that's it. And there's an issue. The dev kind of blames the network and then they go back to sleep.
I think there comes a lot of value into game days and part of like sharing knowledge because you want to bring those architects, those senior engineers that maybe build the systems, but you also want to have those like entry-level engineers, those new grads, those interns to also come into the room. That way they can learn how production works, how really like thought out distributed systems have been built as you can kind of like continue learning on there. But you're not just going to be learning about how they were built. You're actually going to see them work in action. And there's like, that's where you actually get to realize that that real world experience has a lot more value than a lot of the theory classes that you have been taking on your own or have been doing like in a school system. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just like also a great way to be able to like share knowledge and kind of like do this brown bag session around it.
For sure.
Yeah. Another interesting thing that we've done to share knowledge internally at Gremlin is we do something called Takedown Thursdays, which is like our own version of game days. And yeah, that happens every 2 weeks or fortnight in Australian speak. And
nice. I just learned what a fortnight was.
Yeah. But yeah, so one of the things I really love about that is that the entire engineering team will come along to Takedown Thursdays. So that means that you have like your UI engineers there as well as your infra engineers and your application engineers, your backend engineers. Everyone's there together. And that means that you can see when you inject a specific type of failure, how do you handle that on the UI? And that's not something that often happens, right? Like how often do we get people in a room from across different departments to think about how failure actually looks like to the customer, what it looks like? I know when I've been on these big outages in the past, I've seen some strange things happen and, you know, you're seeing errors pop up, but you're wondering, what does this look like to the customer? And then you go on and you look and you go, wow, like that actually looks really horrible.
Yeah. So there, I mean, there's a couple of things, you know, it gives you the opportunity, chaos engineering, to, you know, find problems in your system, find areas where it's not as reliable as you think. But I think also, as we've been discussing, you know, conducting these experiments gives you a deeper understanding of your systems, right? And I think that like when you're responding to an incident as an SRE or an engineer, that having that deeper understanding of the system is going to help you better interact, you know, with problems during incidents, whether or not it's even something that you've tested. You know, just the fact that you have this better understanding of the system is going to be useful when you get that page at 3 a.m. in the morning and you're kind of groggy headed and trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. Like if somebody had told me 2 years ago, you know, when dealing with an outage and kind of cleaning things up, doing the postmortem, and if someone had said, hey, Jacob, could you have seen that earlier or made that me time to detect and repair better by injecting it on purpose? Would you do it? You know, I would probably stop and be like, wait, what? But tell me more.
Like, how do I sign up for that? I want to be part of that. Like, yes, let's go.
Yeah. Right.
I really wish I'd had these tools a few years ago when I was dealing with some problems I was dealing with. But yeah, what are some things, Anna and Tammy, that you learned about the systems you were working with when you were doing chaos engineering?
I think one that I like talking about because it was fairly recent, I got a chance to speak at AWS reInvent with Adrian Cockcroft, and I got to build a little demo of chaos engineering on EKS. And, you know, just kind of like expected everything to be easy to set up. And the application that I set up on EKS was going to be 100% resilient because it was also very much of like, this is a getting started guide on EKS. And I just expected it to be, you know, like top-notch technology in a sense that you would have reliability out of the box. But we ran some chaos engineering experiments on the getting started page. And it was like a little like contact app that you get to like input your name and everything gets saved in the back end via Redis. And a very simple attack of shutting down your Redis primary container. You would expect that the Redis replicas automatically get set up, that they replicate all the information, but that they also promote themselves in case primary goes missing. And you just expect everything to work out of the box. It was very much like, yeah, this is going to be a walk in the park, kind of say, like, we'll see what we discover. And it was very interesting to actually discover that by shutting down this Redis primary container, the replicas would automatically look and realize that the primary container is empty. Therefore, they become empty and promote themselves to primary. So it was like the logic there is not necessarily 100% wrong, but the fact that it doesn't realize that the container went missing and emptied all the information and then it emptied it, like the replica emptied itself out, was like, crap, we just suffered data loss. This is the reason why chaos engineering early on is highly, highly important, because you're building things and you expect them to be resilient out of the box, especially open source technologies that have had a lot of companies using it in the back end. And it was very much of like, all right, cool. I'm very glad to be able to share this to the community of like, you get to play around with open source tools and stuff like that, and you want to bring them on to your side projects, your company projects, but you don't actually necessarily think about the reliability of these tools. So being able to kind of like showcase, hey, Redis is good for some things, but how about the reliability of it in case of incidents such as your containers going missing or like shutting down on their own and stuff like that. So starting to let people think about the way that they build things and to start thinking about resiliency, even from the start of them deploying just a sample application they've gotten off GitHub, was really cool.
Nice.
Tammy?
Yeah, I think one of the most interesting things I've learned is about how to drive the adoption of chaos engineering across a company. And that to me has given me so many learnings. So like I like to separate into two types of chaos engineering. The first one is infrastructure chaos engineering, which we call ILFI, infrastructure level failure injection. And then the other type is application. So that's ALFI, application level failure injection. And when you look at doing infrastructure level injection, this is usually where people start. You know, you've probably heard of Chaos Monkey, where you do like a random shutdown of an instance. Like you can learn a lot from that, right? But there's also a lot more that you can do. And at Gremlin, you know, we have 11 infrastructure level attacks that you can run. But what I've learned about adoption is it's actually more about, you know, with chaos engineering, we talk about blast radius and we say, start small with your experiment, expand. I think it's the same with driving adoption of chaos engineering across your company. It's really good to start small with one team to focus on a specific area that you want to fix. Like, for example, you could have your SRE or production engineering or resiliency team start by working with, say, the database team or the caching team or the traffic team to look at assessing and improving your monitoring and alerting. And maybe you might first start by doing that manually, but then you would also want to start thinking about how could you use an API, like Gremlin provides an API to do your chaos engineering. Mm-hmm. And then after you've learned a bit from that, you then want to expand out to other departments. And one of the things I got the most value from was working really closely with network engineering. And then you can start to look at things like throttling, latency profiling, look at how your system handles different operations at different times of the day on different days of the week. Like, for example, do clones run really, really slow on a Monday during peak traffic? Like I found they do. And then they run a lot faster on Friday. But what if you have a big outage? And it means that you're not going to be able to recover for several hours and you don't even know that, but it's related to the network. Then you need to really work well with the network engineering team to fix that. And then after networking, I think it's good to expand to application teams. And this is like, you know, teams that are pushing out different features, changes to what you're building. And you might want to think about integrating with CI/CD there to do chaos engineering on deploys, like within your build. And then you have to work with the build team. And, you know, then you can look at expanding even further to other areas which are really interesting and new. There's like security, where you could use chaos engineering to identify vulnerabilities proactively. That's a super new area. And for ALFI, the application level failure injection, I love the idea here of starting with UI engineers to look at improving graceful degradation. But yeah, to me, it's just really cool like to think about that, how you can increase adoption but using this blast radius idea.
Nice, nice. So say like, so I'll run a scenario by both of you. Say I'm an SRE, maybe mid-level at a company, and you know, I've seen one of your talks and but I don't know where to get started. I know, you know, of course you can pick an app, but what kind of advice would you give someone who's trying to get a chaos engineering practice off the ground?
Yeah, I think for me, you really want to start by educating people internally what chaos engineering is, because it is a really pretty new topic for a lot of companies. People are just starting to practice it now. And a good thing you can do there is you can just start to share some articles, share some videos in Slack or via email, send them out. Maybe you could even create a chaos community within your own company, or you could get people to join our chaos engineering Slack from in your company. There's over 2,000 engineers in there. It's just gremlin.com/Slack. And yeah, I think the first bit is just education, helping people learn what it is and just chatting to them about it. And then after that, you can try and say, let's plan a game day. Like, let's get some value out of this. Let's learn about our system. But the thing that I would say don't just like go in tomorrow and say, let's take down the data center.
That's not going to go well.
It's not cognizant of the blast radius.
So let's talk about that real quick. So let's talk about one of the things that comes up a lot is, you know, should I be doing this in production and what are the risks there?
Yeah, so we talk about this thing called blast radius. And blast radius basically just kind of like tells you start small. If you don't know how this chaos engineering experiment is going to behave on two of your hosts, why are you going to run it on 100 of your hosts? So the idea with that is that you plan out these chaos engineering experiments. So you think about how many, like, first of all, what services am I going to run an experiment on? What is going to be that experiment? And what are going to be those abort conditions for that experiment? So let's say you start by just shutting down two hosts or increasing, like just putting a heavy load on the CPU on two of your hosts and seeing how your application behaves, but having that abort condition that says, in case you start getting HTTP 500 errors, stop that experiment immediately. And I guess the one thing that I forgot to say is also, like, to answer Rich's question is like, do I just start running this on production? You could, but that's very risky because you actually don't even know how this is actually even going to affect one of your hosts. So we do like saying to start off in the environment closest to production. We know that no environment is going to be like production unless it's production environment.
Sure.
But looking at that staging, that development environment, and starting to run these chaos engineering experiments proactively there is probably the first step. But then thinking on how to continue expanding that is part of the idea of this blast radius, is like, we're not just going to stop at two of our hosts. We want to continue doing this to be able to run this on 100% fleet of your infrastructure, whether that's in the environments prior to production, and eventually grow that maturity that you're able to do this in production and you're able to do these like with more of a cadence, whether it's something like we've done here at Gremlin that we have takedown Thursdays every 2 weeks, or something more of like implementing it to your CI/CD pipeline where it's just kind of like becoming part of that developer flow.
Great. Yeah, I think that, as we said, you know, no environment is like production, right? You know, nothing is ever going to be exactly like your production environment. And so that is the goal eventually, to get in there, because part of what you're trying to do is to find the problems there, right? To try to find those things that are misconfigured or aren't working like you expected. And they may not be broken in your staging environment. So, yeah.
There's also different monitoring tools that you're using in production, like in production versus your development. Like, I've talked to a lot of engineers that's like, yeah, we have open source software for our development and our staging, but we actually pay for tools for production. So it's very much of like, all right, you're going to be like monitoring things differently. And when it actually comes to being in a real life scenario of an outage, whether it's like a step zero, step one, it's like you're looking at different stuff, you're in a different mindset. So being able to run these chaos engineering experiments in production has a really high value.
Tammy, can you talk about monitoring a little bit, about the importance of that?
Yeah, it makes me think about the maturity model that you have as well. So this is really important. Like, a lot of companies that are pretty advanced will have a maturity model, so like reliability, resilience, or DevOps maturity model. And usually what that is, right, is like you rate different teams based on how mature they are. And say you might be like an F, and an F means that you don't have decent monitoring in production, you don't have it in staging, you don't have alerting set up. That means you're an F. And then if you look at how you can move up higher, it's by doing more things and having good practices in place. Like, you would say if you're an A team, A service team, then that means, you know, you're doing chaos engineering experiments in an automated way at least every week, but maybe in some companies multiple times a week. You have great monitoring that you've actually tested using chaos engineering. You've got alerting that you've tested. You've checked your thresholds. You know, this is like a good thing, I think, is to help teams learn like what a service team that's rated an A looks like. And it's pretty hard to get there, you know, and it can take a lot of time. It can take some teams years to move from an F or a D all the way up to an A, but it's definitely worth it.
And it's about making incremental improvement, right? You're never going to fix all the problems at once. And so it's, you know, picking things off your list and working on them.
Exactly. And I think like you can also say, what kind of rewards do we want to have for getting to A? You know, because it is actually really hard to get there. So I think it's a nice thing for companies to think about. And yeah, like, I mean, I got so many ideas for cool rewards that engineers love.
So what excites you about the future of chaos engineering?
For me, the thing that excites me the most is this idea of like just getting your time back. So when you are on a team that has like a high on-call load, you're getting paged all the time, you know, you're working weekends, you're not able to leave your house because you're just constantly getting paged and working on incidents, you just don't have much time to make things better, to fix things. And so, yeah, that's what I'm actually really excited about, chaos engineering. That's why it makes me excited. I just feel like we can help engineers get time back and, you know, have a better balance in life, and then also focus on how we can all move forward. And that's exciting too, to think how you can get that time and then use it on other things within your company during the week instead of having to be just overloaded with issues.
Yeah, I think Tammy nails it 100% also with like a little bit of my view of what excites me about being in the space. Not only am I like, are we getting some companies that I love using to be more resilient, so I'm not angry when I can't order my favorite foods or like get my things delivered within a week. So I want the companies that I love to continue being successful, and seeing some of them get started on practices to make them more resilient makes me happy, because I know that just means success for them. And that means that some of my habits get to continue. There's also the like this whole team happiness and personal happiness that comes when you just don't have pager fatigue, when you're not grumpy all the time because your company is going through like a lot of tech debt, and a lot of it has to do with like reliability or not being like on top of it when you're building out your features and your products and stuff like that. So I really enjoy talking about the part where your engineers do get their time back and they stop being on firefighting mode and they start thinking more about like, okay, we're done firefighting, but how do we make sure that the stuff that we're building is reliable? And then once you get that to a really good steady state or like an A-level service, then you can start thinking about what comes next. So you start freeing up that mental bandwidth on being like on firefighting mode and like scared and just being ready to fight. And you start thinking of building new fun stuff. And yeah, for personal reasons, I talk a lot about how pager fatigue really brings down engineering morale and also has a lot of effects on mental health of engineers. So being able to see another passion of mine also kind of have like chaos engineering have an impact on, it just gets me extra, extra excited on it.
Yeah, I think we've probably all been there at some point, you know, where we've been dealing with that pager fatigue, and it can be really brutal. And at past shops, when I was doing ops work, one of the things that we looked at was our ratio of planned work versus unplanned work. And I think that's what you were just talking about, Anna, that, you know, most teams have this big backlog of like all the cool things they'd like to do, right? And then if you're getting interrupted all the time with incidents, you know, you can't get to do that stuff.
100% agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you plan for 80% planned and 20% unplanned, and it ends up being more like 60-40 or 50-50.
Right.
There's also something to say about just this idea that distributed systems are hard, and there's like this really steep learning curve in getting into the infrastructure, site reliability engineering space. And that being a lot of the reason why we don't have a lot of diverse talent in the space. So being able to kind of like lower that learning curve by saying, hey, it's safe to learn how these things work by you breaking them on purpose, I think this is also a benefit in order to bring people that have had a lot of reasons to stay away from this space due to like the culture or it being like we build really fast, but we don't break things. And if you break something, you're going to get shamed. I think we're also, there's like a little bit of that also going on in this space too.
Yeah, I think having a blameless culture is probably another one of those things that's maybe a prerequisite for doing this work.
At least on the way to it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. Yeah, because it's not easy, right? It's as much of a infrastructure and application issue as it is a culture and people, right? I'd even say almost, you know, more so, which is why it's an interesting problem to tackle and something that I continue to be excited about over and over.
For sure. You want to be able to share your successes, but you also want to be able to share your failure and do this in a manner of not finger pointing and blaming it on people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the more that we share, you know, internally in our companies, but also externally with each other about how we're practicing chaos engineering and what we're learning, I think the better it will be for everyone in the industry. because it's just good to be able to go, oh, you know, I had a problem with this system or this service. And then you can see, oh, other people have the same problem. And then we might actually see an increase of people submitting back bugs and fixes to, you know, massive open source projects, which I think that's going to be really cool too. But we're definitely not there yet because we don't have a very good culture across the industry of sharing like public postmortems with full detail.
Yeah.
But today, hopefully we get there.
For sure.
All right. Well, I think that's our time for today. I want to thank you very much, Tammy Buto and Anna Medina, for joining us. And thanks for listening. Our music is from Kumiku. The song is titled Battle of Pogs. For more of Kumiku's music, visit loyaltyfreakmusic.com or click the link in the show notes. For more information about our chaos engineering community, visit gremlin.com/community. Thanks for listening and join us next month for another episode.